you know, pain on the line.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome once again to the Board of Public Works. We're going to start this morning. We're really pleased to be able to start by recognizing some very deserving state employees for their outstanding work. We'd like to recognize, you know, people who are doing a great job on customer service, which has been a focus of ours for over 5 years. And today we have three people who've been nominated by folks in their agencies for doing an outstanding job in that regard. So we're going to be recognizing them with customer service awards for their incredible work. And first up, we have Norman Simpson from the Maryland Department of Human Services. And he is joined by Chief Information Officer Kenyatta Powers. Norman, really, he serves as a supervisor in the Office of Technology for the Human Services Enterprise Administration. And COVID-19 created the need for Norman and his team to quickly provide the ability for all DHS staff to work remotely. And this prompt attention that he gave allowed 2,700 additional staff members to be able to telework. And this was kind of an emergency situation that required very innovative solutions in order to provide the technology needed to securely deploy laptops for telework. And Norman spent many late nights and long weekends finding solutions and developing tools to prepare staff for teleworking, which enabled them to continue providing their great customer service. And so I can't do it here in person, but I have this governor's citation. We'd love to take a picture with all three of us with you. But Norman, we want to say congratulations. Thank you so much. And maybe we can take a screenshot of this, and then we're going to make sure that we get you the official citation shortly. So thank you for all your great work. And next up, we have Al Sundahara from the Maryland Department of Planning, and he is joined by David Buck, the Director of Communications. And as manager of projections and the State Data Center driving the COVID pandemic, Al has been asked by numerous state agencies to provide data, graphs, charts, and other materials in support of our Roadmap to Recovery plan. At the same time, the Department of Planning has been conducting massive statewide outreach for the 2020 census. And Al and his team created several customer-friendly dashboards and mapping tools for the census, censusmaryland.gov website. We finished, by the way, in ninth place ahead of 41 other states. So I want to congratulate the entire department and everybody who worked so hard. But the department says that Al is always extremely polite and friendly and ready and available to assist, whether it's on a deadline or a weekend or after hours. So we want to congratulate you as well, and thank you very much for all of your great work.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And last but certainly not least, we have Ralph Hurd from the Maryland Department of Agriculture. And he is joined by Mary Darling, the Deputy Director of HR. And as manager of the Mosquito Control Section in Hollywood, Ralph is known for his sound judgment and ability to deploy limited resources to get the job done. And he works around the clock during spraying season to assist employees, handle emergencies, and to ensure steady service to prevent the occurrence of mosquito-borne disease in humans, pets, and livestock. Ralph has been on the front lines of providing mosquito control services to the communities of Charles and St. Mary's County for 50 years now. He was hired as a motor equipment operator for the Southern Maryland Mosquito Control Office at the University of Maryland in 1970. In 1973, these functions and staff were transferred to the newly created Maryland Department of Agriculture. So, Ralph, we want to sincerely thank you for your many, many years of dedicated service to the people of Maryland. So, congratulations to you. And I want to thank all of our recipients very much. We, all of us, Really do appreciate all the hard work you do for the citizens of Maryland. Now, before I turn it over to my colleagues for some opening remarks, I just want to quickly remind Marylanders that 8 days of in-person early voting begins on Monday, October 26th, and runs through Tuesday, November 2nd, and that includes Saturday and Sunday. So we are strongly encouraging you to take advantage of early voting all throughout the next week and weekend. For those of you who want to vote in person on Election Day, we strongly encourage you to do so at off-peak times, such as mid-morning or the early afternoon, to avoid what are expected to be large crowds and potentially very long lines. So with that, I'll turn it over to my colleagues for some opening remarks, and we'll start with Madam Treasurer.
Thank you, Governor. Let me just reiterate your thanks to all the fine state employees. This pandemic has been extremely challenging for us all, and the way the people who work for the state, the public servants who work for the state, have gone about doing their jobs with really significant productivity and efficiency and kindness, it really is a model. I'm very proud to be one of them. And yes, in-person voting, early voting, starts Monday. I hope our turnout continues to be terrific. The mail-in votes are still going in, and they number way beyond what we've ever had. I would just urge everybody who requested a ballot to send it in. Don't sit on it. Send it in or go by the drop box. Your local high school and many other places, it's easy to find out where they are. They go in and they are protected and they are secure and they are counted. We did, and I can't tell you the feeling of pleasure. I mentioned it last week, but the pride of being part of democracy. I thought, Governor, that you were going to mention something about the vaccine, Maryland's plan for vaccine rolling out, which I saw in the paper yesterday, and it's good to know that, as usual, Maryland is trying to plan and look ahead. I just hope we have the opportunity to actually use the vaccine when it's fully developed. I also had a question, and I don't know whether it should be now or when we get to some item that the Department of Health or Human Resources is dealing with, but the issue has come up very recently about unhealthy drinking water on the Eastern Shore. And I would just request, maybe, Governor, that you could ask the appropriate departments to look in and give us back a report on what the situation is, and if, in fact, there is a serious situation at all. And with that, it's good to see everybody, and I would turn it over to the Comptroller.
Thank you, Madam Treasurer, and Governor, good morning. Obviously, as my colleagues on the board know, and people that are frequent attendees of these proceedings are well aware, I have, for the last 7 months, been suggesting to the administration that they need to invest at least $500 million for a small business rescue and stimulus package. Why did I do this? Because the pandemic, no fault of their own, has decimated our small business community. I've been on countless Zoom calls with chambers and other gatherings of small business owners, all sizes, all shapes, different industries, located in every nook and cranny and region of the state. And they all tell me one thing over and over again. We need help. So we have over 170,000 small businesses across the state. My experts are estimating now, sadly, that almost 30,000 have already closed or will close their doors permanently. once again, this is through no fault of their own. This is just the mishandling of the virus by the federal government. And as a result, we have this tremendous economic damage. And I'm not talking about new businesses. I'm talking about businesses like Sunset Restaurant in Glen Burnie. 60 years in business, backbone of Main Street up there, and gone, finished. They're owned by a family, family business, passed down through generations, gone. All the tax revenue that we get, gone. So, not going to come back. And, you know, Enchanted Arts here in Annapolis, yesterday I drove with my wife up Main Street in Annapolis. I've never seen so many for lease signs in windows. Clyde's and Soundry in Columbia, Apple Discount Drugs in Berlin. The list goes on and on and on. So we all talk about how we support small businesses. I know we're all elected officials here at the state level. We really sincerely believe what we're saying. But the question is, can we do everything we can to save them during this unprecedented economic crisis? Obviously, they feel, and I feel now, that we haven't done enough. And these small businesses, frankly, are getting kind of tired of rhetoric from politicians like me, where we come on and say, hey, you're the backbone of the community, you're the heart and soul of the state's economy. And they keep saying, yeah, that's a nice soundbite, but could you please put your money where your mouth is? So, speaking to myself and all politicians generically here in Maryland, 5% of our small businesses have gotten state relief. 70% got the first stimulus, federal relief, the federal, you know, paycheck protection program. But that's over. That's gone. That's disappeared. It's no longer in existence. For every day that we don't take bold and immediate action right now, more and more small businesses are shutting down and will continue to close. I've come up repeatedly, not just once, but twice, three times, with different proposals of how we could invest immediate relief for Maryland small businesses. First, it was the rainy day fund. Second, it was using the positive fund balance. And third was increasing our capital debt and using that as a backstop. All three of these have been warmly received by businesses around the state, but have not gotten any traction here. Governor, you know, God bless you, but the other day you suggested that I wanted to drain our rainy day fund, that my proposals would result in the elimination of entire state agencies, putting thousands of state employees out of work. I think you said tens of thousands was in the newspaper yesterday. I don't care about that. I mean, I don't take it personally. Gosh knows, maybe you just got misinformation or something. But my staff is pretty stung by that because it's completely inaccurate. You and I both know that's not what I'm proposing. You and I both know that we have the money in the reserves to get this done without resorting to draconian cuts. I'm happy, obviously, to work with anybody, put my agency resources at service to figure out how to do this quickly. It's got to be done not within months. It's got to be done not even within weeks. It's got to be done within days. And it can be. I would suggest, obviously, the most available money is the $585.8 million in the positive fund balance as of June 30th. That money should be immediately allocated towards this purpose. We don't do it. December's too late. Winter's coming. They're going to close. They're going to close. So this is obviously not about me. I'm just reflecting what is going on out there in the small business community. But everybody on this meeting this morning, we're all getting paychecks every 2 weeks. We're not worrying about paying the next bill in the mail. We're not worrying about whether we'll be homeless at the end of the month. The homeless at the end of the month is because these small business people are putting their 401ks They're putting their retirements, they're putting their savings, they're putting everything into supporting their business. And thank God for the federal stimulus, because that helped a lot of it. But what this subject and appeal is for is about tens of thousands of small business owners out there who literally can't afford to pay next month's rent, or are going to be forced to lay off what employees they still have, or are accruing more debt just to keep the lights on. They're quite literally, these folks are losing everything. I mean, I can't imagine going through this, through no, once again, no fault of their own. They didn't do something wrong. They're just impacted by this. And so it's obviously become glaringly evident that the federal government's having trouble doing what they're supposed to do and getting a second round of stimulus. And I will say, most of us in Maryland are moderate as far as our fiscal policies. But this federal stimulus is crucial, and we need to match it with some state stimulus. I actually think the state stimulus might spur the federal government to do the right thing and get involved here. This is not liberal or conservative fiscal policy. This is about, we need the stimulus in order to preserve what we have. We need to save as many small businesses as we can. We know for a fact the first stimulus package worked on getting a whole new appreciation for John Maynard Keynes, who was the advocate of spending during that depression, and I think he was right. I think without the first stimulus, we would have had an economic catastrophe, and without a second one, even with a state stimulus, we're going to have problems. But I would importune everybody sincerely to provide support for these desperately, how do you describe them? They're just kind of, they don't ask us very often for anything, but right now they really, really need some kind of expression from the state that we're going to do something bold to help them in this period of volatility and chaos that, once again, unfortunately, they don't deserve what they're going through. And, Governor, I know you're a champion of small business, as I am. I know the treasurer is. I know we have public budgets, but that's all going to happen next year. Right now, we've got an emergency out there. Please, what can I say? I'm happy to work with you and see if we can get something done, because it's a tragedy what's going on right now.
Thank you, Mr. Comptroller. I agree with you. We're very, very concerned about all of our struggling small businesses across the state, and we're continuing to do every day everything we possibly can. I think you know that I got all 50 governors in America together to help push for the stimulus package. We've now put $20 billion into helping struggling Marylanders, including $10 billion that we got from the CARES Act, nearly $8 billion in unemployment benefits. The state of Maryland has invested an additional $250 million already into small businesses, but there are still many others suffering, which is why I'm also the leading advocate on behalf of all the nation's governors to get our folks in Washington to do something about the next stimulus package, which seems to be broken down in divisiveness and dysfunction and typical, you know, politics as usual in Washington, with Republicans and Democrats who can't come together and agree on anything when it's desperately needed. But we're going to be announcing some additional state relief, I believe, as early as tomorrow. And we're going to continue to push for that much-needed stimulus at the federal level, which it doesn't appear as if we're going to get anything done before the election, but I sure hope all of us together will talk to our friends and colleagues in Washington on both sides of the aisle and tell them the critical nature of how much we need this federal assistance in addition to what we can do at the state level. And as bad as it is, and I'm not trying to diminish the issue, because I see and hear it every day. I spent this week traveling all around the Eastern Shore talking with small businesses, and was in Frederick before and Annapolis, and I'm out there talking to these folks. I understand the pain that they're going through, people that are losing their jobs and people that are losing their businesses. We're going to keep fighting for them. We are doing better than almost anybody in the country in our economic recovery. We're doing better than the nation as a whole, we're doing better than most other states. You know, our unemployment is much lower. It's the lowest in the region, one of the best in the country. So this is a terrible economic crisis and the worst one we've had since the Great Recession. And it's going to take all of us working together at the federal, state, and local level to get our small businesses back up and running and to get people back to work. And the other part of that is keeping everybody safe with the virus. We're also doing better than 44 other states with respect to being able to keep Maryland open for business by making sure that people are wearing masks and distancing and following all the public health guidance, which is helping our economy to do so much better than everybody else. Because people really are being vigilant, and it's why we are surrounded by states that are out of control. Many other states have reshut all their businesses, including New York and Arizona and a number of others, and we're trying desperately not to do that. We kept 70% of all of our businesses open throughout the entire pandemic. In June, we opened up 98% of our economy, and in August, we allowed 100% of all businesses to open. So we're providing the assistance, but we really have to get, as the treasurer pointed out earlier, the vaccines in production and then distributed before people feel safe returning back to restaurants and bars and entertainment facilities to try to get the economy back on track. And that's not going to be an easy thing, and it's not going to happen overnight. So we're still in this for the long haul, and I can promise you that we at the state are going to continue to do everything we can to continue to help businesses, and even further than we already have, and we desperately need that bipartisan consensus in Washington. So I'm hoping that you'll all join me in pushing for that after this election is over with. So thank you very much.
Let me just stop for a second, because I'm more than happy to call Washington, see if we can get act like rational adults and everything. But I mean, seriously. If you the $500 million is there, and if you need a backup because you're afraid there's going to be some downturn next year where we're going to have to lay people off in the state system, we can borrow that money one time only to keep as a backstop. But right now the money's there, and I would just beg you to free it up. It's not going to be perfect. I know it can be distributed quickly through the economic development groups at the county level. I can't tell you how important it is, not just the actual dollars, but the symbolism that the state is going to partner with them is crucial. And, survival's the key here. I mean, if they can survive through the March, that's going to be really good for us once some of the things that you indicated are going to happen. I don't mean to get into a back and forth, and I didn't want to hijack this whole meeting, but this is super important, and a month from now, it's not going to be doable.
Well, I can assure you that's what I'm not afraid of anything, and we've been more aggressive than anybody in the country. And like I said, the state has already distributed the $10 billion in economic relief from the federal government. The state has already invested $250 million in tax money to help small businesses. And I have an announcement tomorrow where we're going to invest even more. So thank you very much. We're going to move on to the secretary's agenda.
Hi, good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. There are 20 items on the secretary's agenda and 3 reports of emergency procurements. Happy to assist with answering any questions.
Any questions on the secretary's agenda?
Is item 19 and 20, please.
19 and 20 are from Morgan State University. And we have Cindy Evans available to answer questions.
Okay. So, first of all, I think it's a great project, and I have a lot of confidence in President Wilson and his team. And I think it's very appropriate forward-thinking leadership for Morgan. But I've been contacted by dozens of frustrated parents and students from Towson and the University of Maryland College Park who apparently are begging for relief from a state agency or a semi-state agency, Medco. Apparently their kids who are students at these universities have signed leases, but they're being turned away. They can't go because of the COVID to the respective university, but they're being forced to pay the rent by MedCal.
And MedCal is
something about, you know, we have to in order, because we have to pay our people. What's that all? Is Medco here? Or they are? I think they're funding the Morgan State project. Is there a Medco representative on the?
Robert Brennan and Jeff Wilkie from Medco are participating in the meeting this morning.
Yeah, are you guys asking students who are not able to go to universities to pay their rent anyway at College Park in Towson?
Good morning, Mr. Francho, it's Bob Brennan. We actually have shared with your office detailed explanations as to the actions that we are taking. We are, quite frankly, between a rock and a hard place. I have a legal obligation to the bond investors who lent the monies on these projects to operate these facilities in accordance with the budgets that were set forth, that are approved by the university, Medco, and the operators. We are operating these much like private projects. I will tell you, we are in conversation with the universities. We have made a lot of progress, and particularly with Towson, and with our occupancy levels at where they are right now at the University of Maryland College Park, I don't think we're going to have a cash flow problem. I do have a problem in being able to go back and tell tenants that they're being released from their obligations. I will tell you, we have allowed for students to find replacements. We have allowed for medical deferments. And we are working with the managers. I've told them, go about your normal collections, but we are not going to take any aggressive collection measures against the tenants. I do believe with the operations that we have in place, with the number of students that are occupying these facilities, we're going to be able to get by without having to go pursue the leases. But I'm in a very precarious situation of being able to tell a student that has a lease, a license agreement, that they can be released. I say this with caution because if this pandemic were to take a turn for the worse, the investors are going to come back to me and say, you have to go out and collect the money. I hope I don't have to do that. I don't want to have to do that. But I hope you understand that we are walking a fine line in balancing the responsibility that we have to the people that lent us money and to the operations of the school. And I will tell you, we've been talking to Towson. They've probably been providing more noise about the issue. We had a good conference call on Friday. We have another call this Friday, and I believe we have a resolution. I have to get my board approval. I did brief my board on Monday of our tentative plans, and I think we're going to come up to a solution where Towson will solve the problems there. College Park is a little bit different. I can get into all the details, but without laboring all the intricacies of what we're having to deal with, believe me, we are empathetic. We're sympathetic to what's going on. I don't have a problem, by example, for Morgan. The university, Morgan State University, stepped up to the plate, and we're able to make this our existing project cash flow because of the assistance that we're getting from the university. I don't have problems at Salisbury and Frostburg because they allow students to move in, and we have very high levels of occupancy. Each institution has its own story. We're working with these to make it right, but I do have this responsibility to investors, and I'd like to think in coordination with the universities, Medco, the limited reserve funds that we have, we can work our way through this without having to take any action against these students or parents.
You're not a hedge fund, I take it.
Hardly. No, we're not.
But then why are you acting like a hedge fund?
I don't believe I'm acting like a hedge fund.
It certainly sounds, you know, we have a lot of small businesses, for example, that have landlords that are out of state, REITs and hedge funds. And, you know, they're getting just their rope around their neck. They're still able to negotiate some stuff. But I hate to see Tedco or Medco or Medco, which I identify as a public agency, even though you have a private sector flavor to you. I hate to see you in the business of getting blood from a stone as far as these rental payments. And I hope that you're able to work things out. And I hope the universities will step up and perhaps the legislature at some point. But you're a public entity in my mind, and I hate to see you giving me something that, you know, the banks give me when they say, gee, I'm sorry, we have to foreclose on these poor small businesses because they've all signed these leases. They've all signed them personally. So now we're not only going to evict them, we're going to bankrupt the small business owner because they, you know, probably never thinking it would be called upon, put their own name on the lease. And yeah, legally you can do that, but boy, you have to really be have a harsh view of folks to push that through. And so I hope whatever you work out, you can get back and report to us and make sure you're not causing further distress to Maryland families that, you know, once again, they're not responsible for. They didn't screw up the COVID situation. That happened down there in Washington. So why not declare to your investors, whoever they might be, that they're going to have to be a lot more tolerant of the situation until, as the governor says, we get some kind of medical solution.
I understand where you're coming from. And one, we are a public-private entity. We do wear the umbrella of the state. We carry that banner with pride. We have a very strong team. We're trying to work through these problems. And I understand where you're coming from. I wish I had an easy solution. I do not want Medco's problems to be a big state problem. I understand that we have families out there that are requesting certain relief. I'm going to repeat myself. While those transactions are out there, those leases are out there, those licenses are out there, we are not aggressively pursuing. I'd like to think that we can get through this, have cash flow, and we will not be pursuing these obligations in the long run. But I don't have the answer you're looking for. I apologize. I'm doing what I believe we have to do. It is also with advice of counsel. It's advice with bond counsel who advises us. Our financial advisor has said the same. So I understand where you're coming from.
No, Mr. Brennan, I have a lot of confidence in you. I'm sure you can take your foot off the, or keep your foot on the brake a little bit. You mentioned bond counsel. I think it was Shakespeare who famously said, in instances like this, can't we just get rid of the lawyers? A little facetious there, but don't get forced into a lot of things that are going to be counterproductive, I guess would be my request, and keep us in the loop if you can.
Well, I certainly will. And to just dovetail into your opening comments about small businesses, we have also a big development side of our portfolio, and that's where we're working with Morgan. It's been unbelievable what we've had to go through with this pandemic. I can tell you back in March and April, I had several projects that were in the process of starting construction, closing on financings. All of those things have moved forward. And it's really important that we understand, and it gets into what your comment is, we're keeping businesses that are in the construction trades operating, going. In fact, we just completed the Community Engagement Center for the University of Maryland, Baltimore. It was done on time. We finished a project up in Garrett County. even though contractors came out of Pennsylvania and Pennsylvania shut down construction trade, we were able to get that done. We have the National Park Service project in Williamsport moving along. We haven't missed a beat there. And I can tell you, I'm really concerned about having the virus close down a site. We maintain very strict controls to try to avoid that. And so far, knock on wood, we've been able to keep things going without missing a beat. In fact, our city garage project, it's so easy to get into the city right now. They were supposed to be done in December. We finished up in August. So construction trades have actually been able to get to the job sites. So this project is also going to be really important. We're going to be employing a lot of people. Gil Bain's going to be the major contractor. We've got very large minority participation requirements in this contract, and it's going to bring a lot of jobs into Baltimore City. And I understand why you have concern with what we're doing on their side. We're working our way through it. I had a phone conversation with Senator Gazzone and Zucker yesterday. I think they understand where we're coming from. They might not like it, but they also, basically, we're going to work our way through this, and people are not going to get hurt. And that's my objective.
Governor. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. You know, I'll just add that we've been trying to work on this for a couple of months, and we've been in discussions with not only Medco, but with the Chancellor's office and with our budget secretary, Secretary Brinkley, and talking about, I agree, we really shouldn't be taking action against these folks, but I understand that the bond council, that the bondholders need to get paid and need to have that cash flow. So I think finding a way between the university system, the individual universities themselves, Medco, and perhaps if necessary, some help from state budget to make sure that we're not taking action. And on the comment about keeping construction open, it's one of the reasons why our economy is doing so great and so many people are working. The construction industry is booming, unlike Pennsylvania and many other states across the country who shut down construction for 5 or 6 or 7, 8 months. We kept it open the entire time, and we're doing more construction right now than ever before, keeping the trades busy and keeping people working. So thank you very much. Any other questions on the Secretary's agenda?
Yes, items A1 through A3, please.
Items A1 through A3 are emergency referral reports from the Department of Health. We have Dr. Robert Myers available.
Hey, Dr. Myers, could you just update us on what the status of rapid testing is in Maryland? And I believe that there was an announcement last month by the governor that we're purchasing rapid antigen tests through an interstate compact. I guess the question is, what's the status of that, and how accurate are the results of these tests compared to the other tests that were accustomed?
Yeah, I can handle that one for you. We announced about a month ago that we put together a bipartisan group of 5 Democratic governors and 5 Republican governors for the acquisition of 5 million rapid 15-minute antigen tests. We did an announcement at Becton Dickinson, who employs several thousand people here in the state of Maryland. These BD tests, the rapid tests, are not the same as the diagnostic testing that takes 24 to 48 hours, and they're not as accurate, but they're about 86% accurate. We've already gotten, we're the first state in the nation, and the first state in this compact to get our first 250,000 of these rapid tests with more on the way. We're also getting rapid tests from the federal government, which are already out to all of our nursing homes. So we're using Abbott tests, BD tests, and Quidel tests, and we're starting to implement them in lots of different very important areas. I'll just stress that they don't take the place of the more accurate, longer-term, fully diagnostic tests that are more accurate, but These Dickinson tests don't show false negatives in about 14% of the cases. They might show a false positive. So if you get the quick test and it shows you're positive, everybody's immediately gets the full test and waits the 24 or 48 hours. But it's I would say we're the federal government has finally stepped up in this area, and our state government has been leading once again on the testing strategy.
Well, I kid ourselves that Dr. Hogan and Dr. Francho and Dr. Kopp are in charge of this thing, but seriously.
I have several honorary doctorates, but they didn't give me a white coat.
Yeah. No, but I just want to make sure that, because I noticed that the winner of item A3, Thermo Fisher Scientific, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration alerted clinical lab staff and healthcare providers of a risk for inaccurate results using test kits specifically from them. And I just wonder, are we, the 14% positivity finding that results in a second test, that can be pretty, that's a pretty large percentage. I'm wondering if...
Not really, because the earlier versions of these tests were about 50% accurate, and we refused to use them. These are the best ones available anywhere in the world.
Well, that's good. But if someone takes the test and they're,
test without the real test. That's absolutely part of the strategy.
Yeah, and I'm, perhaps the 14% figure is right or not, but... the issue that I would like is that, to at least hear from you from, perhaps, Governor, is that are we testing, is it state-run laboratories that are doing this, or are we doing independent laboratories, independently operated ones?
Well, the great news about these rapid tests is they don't need a laboratory. You get the results right there on a little tiny handheld device that's not much bigger than a cell phone. And there's both private entities, all of our nursing homes, and the state health department are all now providing them and getting them out to the most important areas where we need those fast results. And it's that in conjunction with the rest of our testing strategy where we have a huge stockpile where we're doing more testing than almost anyone. We've done over 3 million tests. All of that helps us get our economy open and keep people safe.
Okay, so if I, for example, get tested with a rapid test and it shows that I have coronavirus.
Then you immediately, hopefully right there at the same time on site after the 15 minutes, get your other test, which you'll have to wait 24 to 48 hours to get the results.
Yeah, so I'm just kind of in stark terror until that's done. But thank you.
We're gonna lock you down until you get the results of your second one.
There you go.
Yeah, that makes sense, but that could be a lot of people, particularly if they're subject to that. But anyway, who's the doctor on the line? Dr. Myers?
Mr. Controller, this is Dana Dembro. You can call me Dr. Dembro if you want to. I'm the Director of Procurement for the Department of Health, the Governor, Madam Treasurer, Controller. We also have on the line the Chief Operating Officer of the Department of Health, and Dennis Rader and I are both prepared to respond to specifics if you have questions beyond what the Governor has already informed you.
Yeah, I just want to make sure this 14% false positive is in fact what's going on, because some folks have told me that where these rapid tests have come in, there have been like 60, 70, 90 people who are tested in a row are testing positive. And that, A, obviously terrifies them, and B, if it's inaccurate, it completely gums up the system. I'm told that there was something wrong with how they actually, I don't know what, put the test together or something. I'm just curious as to whether you guys in the health department, A, agree with the governor, and B, are on top of this situation of these rapid tests not being particularly accurate.
Mr. Controller, I believe that we are. I'm going to defer to Dennis in just a moment, but let me explain, first of all, before he responds. There are two types of tests. One is the checking of antibodies. And in that case, if antibodies are detected in a specimen, that means the person has or had COVID-19. And oftentimes, when the antibody test may not reveal accurately whether there are antibodies present. We are now upgrading to a genetic testing called PCR, the polymerase chain reaction. That means that they amplify the nucleic acid that is associated with COVID-19, and that's a much more accurate measurement of whether COVID-19 actually exists. So we're using both types, and we are upgrading equipment as well. Deputy Secretary or Chief Operating Officer Schrader, are you on the line? And can you add further details?
Yeah, I'm here, Dana, Mr. Comptroller, Treasurer, Governor. Dana explained it well. The only thing I'll mention is the point of care test uses an antigen technology, which is a protein, and we are still field testing these, and we want to make sure, for the exact reason that you mentioned, Comptroller, that as these come into the state, we're doing the antigen test backed up by the PCR test, and as we gain confidence, we'll reevaluate week over week. This thing is moving very, very quickly. The only other thing I'll mention is on that Connecticut lab, that was a PCR test that you mentioned, and we have that PCR machine in our state public health lab. We are going back and making sure that we validate that test ourselves, but we've been using that PCR test for quite a while. That technology is good technology. Our understanding through the homework we've been doing is that there was a problem at that particular lab in Connecticut with the processing, but we're going to validate that just to be sure.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you, Governor.
Thank you. Any other questions, or is there a motion on the Secretary's agenda?
Move approval.
Second.
3-0. Now we're going to move on to DNR, real property agenda.
Hi, good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, Jeannie Hadaway-Riccio, Secretary of the Maryland Department of Natural Resources. We have 12 items on our real property agenda today. We are withdrawing item 9A, and I wanted to just take a second to highlight item 12, which is approval of $20 million in rural legacy grant funding, $20 million in rural legacy grant funding, and also the expansion of 5 rural legacy areas, which will allow us to continue utilizing this really important land conservation program. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
First of all, Madam Secretary, let me just say I really enjoyed being with you in St. Michael's the other day and talking with some of the businesses. I appreciate all the work that your department's doing. I love the fact that we're breaking records in our state parks, and I want to just congratulate you and your team. And with that, anybody have questions on the DNR agenda?
No, hats off to you, Governor, for putting $20 million in for the Rural Legacy Program. Unless that was the legislature, maybe it was too, but that's a fabulous program. Madam Secretary, keep it up.
It's the created by the former Speaker of the House, Cass Taylor, from Western Maryland as part of One Maryland. And I think it has worked to bring Maryland together as One Maryland. And is a very good use, I'm sure the Comptroller would agree, of bond funds. And I just want to mention 3A, the open space, Dorchester County. I received a communication from Senator Addie Ecker, who pointed out most particularly how important the 6 trash receptacles will be. And she herself spent significant time out there picking up trash and knows how difficult it is to keep the place safe and healthy. This is a nurse, Senator, speaking. So I thank you for it. Well, thank you, first Governor, and thank you for visiting St. Michael's along with the First Lady. I know our local businesses really appreciate your support and having the opportunity to engage with you. And to all the board members, thank you for your continued support of Rural Legacy. You may recall last year we celebrated 20 years and over 100,000 acres preserved, and that's due and thanks to your support of these programs. And Madam Treasurer, thank you for highlighting the Sail Winds project. As the Governor pointed out, we have increased use of all of our parks and all of our open spaces, and along with that comes the added impact on those spaces. So this is a really important project for the Cambridge waterfront. It's a highly utilized area.
but a great recreational opportunity for the city of Cambridge right along the waterfront and connecting to our Bill Burton fishing pier. And I know Senator Eckert has been out there personally cleaning that area and taking care of it as a resident of Cambridge, which we greatly appreciate her stewardship.
Yeah, well, lastly, I just want to say I'm really looking forward to Saturday when we have the graduation, the swearing in of a new NRP class. We appreciate all of those folks that are going to be part of one of the oldest Marine law enforcement organizations in the nation, and I'm excited to be there with you on Saturday to congratulate these young men and women. Any other questions, or is there a motion?
Move approval.
There a second? All right, 3-0. Thank you, Madam Secretary. We're going to move on to the university system. I hope we move on. No, nothing on the university system. We'll move on to the Department of Transportation. Morning, Mr. Secretary.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, my name is Greg Slater, Secretary of Maryland Department of Transportation. The Maryland Department of Transportation is presenting 18 items today for your consideration. Myself, as well as members of our team, are here to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions on the transportation agenda?
Zero. Good job.
Well, good job, Mr. Secretary. I say we take it while we can, and, you know, I'll call for a motion. Nothing on transportation. Thank you very much. We're going to move on to the Department of General Services. Maybe we're having some technical difficulties with the university system and DGS. Are we? No items? No. Well, we have the Deputy Secretary of DGS here, but we don't have...
University.
Oh, university has none. The DGS does. You have 26 items, I think.
Yes, we do. Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Nelson Reichert, the Deputy Secretary of General Services. Today, we are presenting 26 items for your consideration, including one supplemental item. We are withdrawing item 3AE. Representatives are all in line to answer any questions you have about the DGS agenda. And I believe on agenda item one, the Frederick County Executive, Jan Gardner, and our Director of Public Works are here to speak with you.
Yeah, well, thank you. Let's get started with that item one. It's a $3 million grant for Frederick County for the Lake Linganore dredging project. And I will maybe hear from County Executive Gardner.
Okay, I think I showed up. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we see you.
Good morning, and thank you very much for providing me with the opportunity to speak. For the record, I am Frederick County Executive Jan Gardner, and I am joined by several individuals from my staff, as well as from the City of Frederick, representing Mayor Michael O'Connor, and from the Lake Linganore Association, and also from Oakdale Investments, which is a developer of Lake Linganore. So I want to begin by thanking the governor for including funding in the capital budget to support the dredging of Lake Linganore. That is very much appreciated, and it is an important water quality and water capacity project for the City of Frederick and for Frederick County. And the county has been involved in removing sediment from the lake in an ongoing project. Today I want to request the Board of Public Works approve the waiver to exclude one of the property owners as a beneficiary to the grants, and then to approve the two grants for a combined total of $3 million for the Lake Linganore dredging project. I'm pleased with the DGS recommendation, asking you to consider the waiver and to enter into the grant agreements. The dredging project is removing sediment that has accumulated in the lake over the last 48 years. It allows the recovery of lost reservoir capacity and improvements in water quality, which is the primary source of water for the City of Frederick. The $3 million grant will supplement $18 million that's been invested by the City, the County, and the Lake Linganore Association. And it will remove about 130,000 cubic yards, or 37% of the sediment in the reservoir. The $3 million in additional state funding will certainly allow us to remove additional cubic yards of sediment, which will ensure adequate capacity of water supply for the city of Frederick for decades. So, again, it's an important project for the city and county as well as for Lake Lanier. Now, Secretary Brinkley and Secretary Grumbles have toured the project and certainly have a good understanding of its goals. So, in August, we became aware of an issue regarding ownership of the land under the lake, under the water. So, a portion of the underwater land is identified by SDAT as being owned by Oakdale Investments. Again, who is the developer of the balance of the Lake Lanier planned unit development? So, during a conference call with DGS staff last month, it was recommended that the county request a waiver to eliminate Oakdale Investments' need to sign the grant agreements. And we think that waiver request makes sense and is reasonable. The dredging is occurring under the water and not on any developable land. The developer has objected to signing the grant agreement as a beneficiary because the dredging project is really under the control of the county. It's occurring in the waters of the state. The lake itself is controlled by the Lake Lanier Association, and they are one of the other signatories to the agreement. So Oakdale Investments doesn't have control over underwater property. Certainly they're not developing underwater property. And so, and eventually all of that land, that ownership of that land under the lake will transfer to the Lake Lanier Association when the development is completed. So, I don't know if you want to hear additional information about it. We can certainly answer any questions you may have, but we really would ask you to support the waiver and support approving the grant request. And, again, we have lots of people on the phone with us who can answer any technical questions you might have.
Thank you, Madam County Executive. We appreciate you being with us this morning. And nobody has questions for you. We have another speaker that we'd like to hear from as well, and that's Zach Kirshner, who's the Director of Public Works for the City of Frederick.
Thank you. Good morning. I appreciate the opportunity to speak. I'm here representing the City of Frederick, and for the record, my name is Zach Kirshner, Director of Public Works. And I just wanted to say that if approved, these grant funds provide an incredible opportunity for the city to accomplish additional dredging through the partnerships with Frederick County. That dredging will provide for the capacity needed to provide a water source for our residents far into the future. So I appreciate your consideration of this request. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much. Anybody have any questions on this topic or on any other item?
I thank the county executive. Now I know a lot about dredging out there. That's good. And thank you for taking the time to bring us up to date and great part of our state.
Thank you. I agree. I was going to ask the county executive whether her offer of more testimony was a threat or a promise. I appreciate it. It's a very good project. Thank you.
Well, great.
Thank you for support for I'm sorry.
No, thank you very much. We're happy to have you with us today, and we're happy to support the project. Any other questions on this item or any other topics on the DGS agenda? If
item
not,
13, please. Oh. Item 13.
So, Deputy Secretary Reichert, this is a request for us to maintain a cloud-based electronic patient health record system for the correctional system. I noticed that what we're approving today, plus what's already been there, it's in effect a total contract of $41.5 million. My concern is that the second bidder was not a total of $41 million, but was a total of $14 million. So why aren't we going with $14
million? Police Secretary Robert Green and Deputy Secretary McCulley are available to respond to your questions.
Okay. Hey, Mr. Secretary.
Morning, Mr. Secretary.
Good morning, Governor. Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, we are here to respond to those questions. I have with me today three of our staff that will also be involved in that. This project for the electronic medical records began in 2016. It is a project integral to bringing together medical, dental, mental health, as well as a strong interdependence on the operational aspects of all of those initiatives, as well as a continuity of care for our reentry. In appreciation of your question, Mr. Comptroller, may I ask that Anna Lansall, our Director of Procurement, give you the review process, and then we'll have another brief overview on the technical side to assist in those decisions. Ms. Lansall?
Good morning, Governor, Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. For the record, my name is Anna Lansall, Director of Procurement for the Department of Public Safety and Correctional Services. Regarding your question, NASCAR was deemed a susceptible bidder as they met all the requirements of the RFP and took no exceptions. Therefore, NASCAR's price proposal was opened and evaluated accordingly. Department provided opportunities through discussion and best of final offers to allow NASCAR to revise its pricing, even though NASCAR submitted a low price and missed the opportunity to submit revised pricing, it still does not provide adequate justification to disqualify NASCAR for being reasonable, susceptible for being selected for award.
If I may ask as well, our project manager, he did technical evaluation, which will speak to how the pricing was developed. Amara Tan, please.
Could somebody explain to me why we have a $26.8 million difference in these two bidders, and we pick the high bidder rather than the low bidder? Just was it because something was wrong with their bid, or was it concern they weren't able to do it, or?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
Yes, Comptroller, I believe our project manager, Amara Tem, will speak directly to that. You will find some comparison information also in the document around the technical ability, responsiveness, and what seemed to be just a extremely artificially low bid. Tim, our project manager.
Good morning, Mr. Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. For the record, I'm a Marvel Thea, project manager for this project. Fusion present a tightly integrated and cohesive system which leverages workflow logic that is in line with and compared with industry-leading health record systems and distinguishes top-level products from generic products. NASCAR systems appears archaic from a design, look, and feel perspective. The organization and presentation of the information displayed in the Fusion solution is more natural and accessible to a user when compared to the NASCAR SPADA. Fusion has proven experience working with various state correctional facilities versus NASCAR's record of working primarily with counties and local correctional facilities. By proposing a low bid price, NASCAR has taken significant risk in contract performance. Based on the department's previous procurement experience with similar IT systems in terms of complexity, as prices push downward, performance risk goes up. The consequence of failure on this project will be considerable given the urgent need to meet the department's requirements of the Duval settlement. Such consequences include but are not limited to late deliveries, litigation, cost overruns, and project delays. During the demonstration, each member of the Fusion's team member was well-versed in all aspects of the system and conversant with how the system can address the department's need with an appropriate solution. They were well-prepared and able to answer the committee's question. In doing so, Fusion showed the committee they could have confidence in their ability to identify key resources to complete this project. Fusion stands head and above shoulders above their competition, and the department is looking forward to working with them on this project.
Are we going to own the data, Mr. Secretary, after this contract's over, or are they going to?
We own it. This is a system that will be owned by the state. We own the data. Mr. Combs, our CIO, may have one final 30-second comment around the evaluation with our colleagues at Do-It as well. Mr. Comptroller, that showed this bid was more at market value. Mr. Combs?
Good morning, Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. For the record, my name is Kevin Combs. I'm the Chief Information Officer for the Department of Public Safety and Correctional Services. The item before you was reviewed by Do-It, both from a technical and price standpoint, and we were given a green light to proceed with the procurement. Thank you.
Thank you. That's all I need, Governor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Secretary. Any other questions on the DGS agenda? If not, we'll call for a motion in a second.
Second. Let's see. So could we just hear quickly on item 15? I don't have any problem with the renewal option that the contract's talking about, but I just want to confirm that what I read in the newspaper is correct about the Maryland State Police Aviation Command. Is there someone there that can assure me that, in fact, there is a budgetary change there? I recall reading about it in the newspaper, but do we have to do something at the BPW to to restore the funding, or is it all like magic put together?
I think maybe Secretary Brinkley can address that if there's nobody from State Police.
If Kathy Fisher is available to talk about
that. Oh, hey, very good.
Oh, right.
Very good.
Captain Fisher?
Good morning. Yes, Captain Fisher here, the Governor of Mr. Comptroller Francho and Madam Secretary. Correction, Madam Treasurer. Thank you, everyone. Comptroller Francho, would you mind just re-clarifying your question about aviation?
I just want to make sure that it's not something formally that the Board of Public Works has to do on this reduction that caused quite a kerfluffle, and I'm glad to see that it got reversed. I just want to know, is there something that we need to do administratively to make sure that, I mean, I read about newspaper, but is there something other than a press release, I guess, that needs to be looked at?
Yeah, I directed the Superintendent of State Police and the Budget Secretary to fund it, and they both have taken action, and we can get maybe Secretary Brinkley to address the details, but doesn't require action by the Board of Public Works.
Excellent.
Because we're just doing the budget items ourselves.
Yeah,
that's correct, Governor and Mr. Comptroller. You took the action. You took the action on the 21 budget as we move forward. But it was broad, and it was to the State Police budget itself on the aviation facility. The governor's made the direction that we keep everything moving forward, and therefore we'll handle it as a deficiency if they don't already have other funds within the existing budget now. So it's not going to be an issue. You'll certainly see it as we submit it, but retroactive to this, to the 21 budget as a deficiency.
Fabulous. Thank you, Governor. That's terrific. Mr. Brinkley, could you weigh in on the $500 million? Maybe we could help out. You could help out, get that looked at a little more closely, because you seem to have the magic touch.
I'm working very closely with the governor and his team in communicating what tomorrow's announcement will be. But keep in mind, we still have to deal with certainly the 21 budget, and we have to deal with any unknowns that come forward with the 22 budget, which is why the money left over from 20 helps us cushion it in addition to the rainy day fund. But we still have an awful lot of moving parts here, and our issue, and certainly the three of us, the treasurer, the comptroller, and I sitting on that board of revenue estimates, are constantly seeing how the science of revenue predictions have been thrown out the window with this whole pandemic.
That was a good, evasive answer, Mr. Secretary. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Came from the Senate.
Yeah, long time in the Senate, you could tell.
Yeah. Can I just say on this item, I'm glad to see that so much concern was voiced and it was heard and it could be corrected. I would point out there were other cuts that were taken that I believe were not appropriate. I didn't have the vote, but if you're in the mood for going back and looking at things that need funding, I'm sure that you could send to a list.
I think the budget secretary would argue there were hundreds of millions of cuts we did not say we should go back.
You're right, Governor. I would argue that. Again, we'll just have to see what the BRE comes up with in December. So there's some, we're in uncharted territory here. All of us know that. And we're trying to certainly be responsive. I don't want to say reactive. We're trying to be responsive to the needs that we have going forward. Again, there's no textbook for how we deal with any of this.
And some of our discussion internally, Madam Treasurer, was the uncertainty of what happens with the economy with a potential fall and winter surge, right, which we're seeing a lot of our experts talk about, which could be devastating to the economy, further devastation, which is going to could dramatically impact our revenue estimates, and we figured that we should postpone our additional decisions until we get that December action by the Board of Revenue Estimates, and as we're looking to put together our budget going into the pre-session time frame.
I think that's very prudent. I think that's quite prudent. I appreciate that. Can I just say also to go back for a moment to the item the comptroller brought up, the 13IP. I have no basis in which to disagree with the combined Public Safety and Correctional Services and do it. I'm not quite sure that I entirely understood all the responses to the comptroller's question, but I'm not sure that further questioning will get into it. I understood much better. But I appreciate you raising those questions, comptroller.
Yeah, I internally raised the same questions, and I understand and appreciate the concern. You know, I was convinced after hearing from the experts that this was critical to the compliance with the Duval settlement and that it could cause serious problems if we went with a deficient contract that wasn't providing all of the things that were required. And so, but I first thing I said was, why is there such a big difference? And the simple answer was, the one contract wouldn't really take care of the issues we had to address, and this one is more expensive, but also more inclusive and more effective.
Don't you agree with me, Governor? We could every once in a while use a few less lawyers telling us.
With all due respect to my lawyer friends, I've been saying that for decades. Long before I became governor, I've been saying we have too many lawyers.
Well. Governor, I'm not sure that I disagree that we need people besides lawyers, but I would point out to the comptroller that Shakespeare said that in the context of, first we kill the lawyers, and then you do away with law.
Uh-oh. Okay, I stand corrected.
7S is about DJS physicians, and I support the item. But it seems to me that JS has had problems with the care and physician care at their institutions and their facilities for years, as well as other contracts. And I just would love to hear at some point how this is being approached and what the answers are for getting at, with the resources we have, the state salary, et cetera, the sort of professional assistance that DJS needs.
Madam Treasurer, Joe Clary, the Chief of Staff, is here available online to address your questions.
I assume Mr. Clary is ready to address the question about item 7 in particular. I think my question is a broader one, however, and I'm not sure.
Maybe we could have Secretary Abed follow up with you directly answer any questions you might have in a broader sense rather than just on this item.
And let me say, these are problems that predate the Secretary. I'm not drawing a bead on anyone in this, but it's an ongoing concern.
We will be in touch with Secretary Abed to meet with you and address your questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If that's appropriate, move approval.
Very good. Is there a second? Well, 3-0 on DGS, and I believe that concludes our agenda today. I want to thank everybody for all of their preparation and answering our questions, and I want to thank my colleagues for all the great work that we do together. And with that, that concludes our Board of Public Works for this morning.
Governor, let me just point out, the next time we come together, this board, I believe, is the 4th of November.
Yeah, we hopefully will know some result the next time we get together. I'm hoping we're still counting votes by then.
See you then.
Okay. Take care.
Yeah.